A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been to one too many conferences, where an MC grabs a microphone and suddenly you're supposed to interrogate the stranger next to you about breakfast. He wants us to dig into the weirdest of these, the stage-directed icebreakers that go past cheesy and land somewhere between cringe and psychological warfare. The ones that don't build connections so much as they manufacture a shared memory everyone would rather forget. He's asking, what are the most delightfully weird examples out there, and why do they produce awkwardness instead of actual rapport?
I've been waiting for this one. I have a folder.
Of course you do.
It's not a large folder, but it's annotated. And here's the thing, the category is more specific than people realize. We're not talking about the casual mingling kind of icebreaker, the what do you do over coffee. We're talking about the moment an organizer with a microphone dictates the terms of your next interaction. You're no longer a free adult at a professional event. You're now a participant in a social exercise you didn't consent to.
The hostage situation icebreaker.
And what makes one of these go from mildly cheesy to cringe? There's a structure to it. Three factors keep showing up. First, demanded vulnerability. How much personal disclosure the prompt asks for. Second, publicness. Whether your answer stays between you and one other person or gets reported back to the whole room. Third, artificiality of framing. The degree to which you're being asked to roleplay something nobody would ever do naturally.
So, what's your favorite movie? Scores low on all three. Low vulnerability, private answer, normal question.
Right, it's cheesy but survivable. The problem is that conference organizers don't stop there. They feel this pressure to be creative, to be memorable, and that pressure pushes them up the scale on all three factors simultaneously. And that's where the truly weird stuff lives.
Let's get into the examples. The ones that make you grateful for a fire alarm.
So the first one I want to talk about, and this is a real thing that happened at a tech conference in 2019, is called the Breakfast Detective. The MC gets up and announces that everyone needs to turn to their neighbor and interrogate them about what they ate for breakfast. And I mean interrogate. You're supposed to ask follow-up questions. Was the toast adequately buttered? Did you notice any textural inconsistencies in the oatmeal? And then, this is the key part, you report your findings back to the room.
So you're performing curiosity about the most mundane possible detail, in public, under a role-play framing that nobody asked for.
It scores high on artificiality, you're cosplaying a detective over toast. High on publicness, you're reporting to the room. Low on vulnerability, because it's breakfast. But 2 out of 3 is enough. The cringe comes from the forced performance. You're not actually curious about your neighbor's breakfast. Your neighbor knows you're not curious. The MC knows you're not curious. And yet the entire room is now committed to this fiction.
The thing about breakfast specifically is that it's almost designed to produce boring answers. Most people ate either nothing or something they didn't think about. I had a granola bar. I had coffee. Now you have to stretch that into a detective report.
Subject exhibited suspicious behavior around a banana. It's absurd. And the organizer who designed this almost certainly thought they were being whimsical and fun. They pictured a room full of laughing professionals bonding over the shared silliness. What they actually got was a room full of people mentally calculating how long until the next session.
What's the next one?
The emotional temperature check. This one's become weirdly popular in the last few years. The MC asks everyone to rate their emotional state on a scale of 1 to 10 and then explain to a stranger why they're a 6 today.
Oh no.
And it's not, say a number, and we move on. You're supposed to actually explain. I'm a 6 because my cat is sick, and I'm worried about a deadline, but I had a good lunch. To a person you met 40 seconds ago.
That's the one where the vulnerability factor spikes. You're asking for genuine emotional disclosure.
And the Scientific American piece on this nailed why it backfires. There's a concept called psychological reactance. When people feel their autonomy is threatened, they instinctively resist. Mandated vulnerability doesn't produce openness. It produces exactly the opposite. People either give fake answers or they resent being asked, sometimes both.
The I'm a 7 because I'm at a conference answer, which translates to, I'm not doing this.
And the thing is, even extroverts experience this. It's not about being shy. Reactance is universal. If I walk up to you at a party and say, tell me something personal right now, your brain doesn't go, finally, an opportunity to share. It goes, who are you and why are you in my space?
The MC essentially becomes a stranger, demanding emotional labor from 200 people simultaneously.
And the publicness factor is high here too, because you're saying this out loud to someone who now has a piece of personal information about you that they didn't earn. There's no relationship, no trust, no context, just a microphone and a demand.
Daniel mentioned one in his prompt that I think fits here, the corporate variant of two truths and a lie.
Oh, this one's special. So, the standard version, you say three things about yourself, two true, one false, people guess which is the lie. It's a party game, fine. But the corporate variant twists it so the lies are about professional achievements. I closed a $2 million deal. I once gave a keynote in Tokyo. I've never learned to swim. And now you're not just playing a game. You're performing your resume as a guessing exercise.
Which means the person next to you is now evaluating your career while pretending to play a game.
The CNBC piece on workplace icebreakers identified exactly this problem. These exercises demand emotional labor without consent. You didn't sign up to have your professional identity turned into entertainment. But the framing makes it impossible to refuse without looking like you can't take a joke or you're not a team player.
The social penalty for opting out is the hidden cost of all of these. Nobody says you have to participate, but everyone knows you do.
And that's where resentment builds. It's not the icebreaker itself, it's the coercion wrapped in a smile. The CNBC article pointed out that forced interaction creates resentment, not rapport. You can't mandate connection. The moment you try, you've already lost.
There's one more example I want to hit before we zoom out. The human bingo card.
I knew you were going to bring this one up.
For listeners who haven't had the pleasure, you're handed a bingo card with squares that say things like, has visited more than 10 countries, or has a pet with a human name, or speaks 3 languages. You have to circulate and find people who match each square and get them to sign it. First a bingo wins.
It turns networking into a scavenger hunt, where other human beings are the items.
The transactional nature of it. You're not talking to someone because you're interested, you're talking to them because they might have a dog named Kevin, and that's the last square you need. The Guardian's analysis of icebreaker awkwardness pointed out that the best social interactions at conferences are the unplanned ones. The coffee queue. The accidental hallway encounter. Those work because they're opt-in, low stakes, and organic. Human bingo is the opposite of all three.
And yet it persists. It's been around for at least 15 years. I've seen it at academic conferences, tech conferences, industry trade shows. Some organizer always thinks they're the first person to discover it.
The square that always gets me is, has never broken a bone. That's not a conversation starter. That's a medical history questionnaire disguised as fun.
Find someone who's been on television. Now you're just ranking people by interestingness in public. The person who's never been on TV feels great about that interaction.
So let's step back. We've got 4 examples. Breakfast detective, emotional temperature check, corporate two truths, and a lie, human bingo. And they all fail in predictable ways using that 3-factor model. High on at least 2 of the 3. Vulnerability, publicness, artificiality. But here's where it gets interesting.
Go on.
They fail on their own terms. They don't create the connection they're supposed to. But they succeed at something else.
They create shared negative memories.
The remember that awful icebreaker becomes a stronger social glue than the icebreaker itself ever could have been.
This is the paradox of negative bonding. I've seen it happen. You're at the post-conference drinks and someone says, what was that breakfast detective thing? And suddenly everyone has a story. Everyone has a take. The icebreaker failed completely at its stated goal, but succeeded wildly at giving everyone something to talk about.
It's almost beautiful. The organizers set out to manufacture a connection and accidentally manufactured it, just not in the direction they aimed.
And if you think about it, the worse the icebreaker, the stronger the bond. A mildly cheesy, what's your favorite movie doesn't generate stories. Nobody remembers it an hour later. But 7 minutes of forced eye contact with a stranger while an MC tells you to find your soulmate? That's a story you tell for years.
Wait, is that a real thing?
I'll get to that, but first, let's quantify this. Using the three-factor model, we can actually predict which icebreakers will be merely cheesy and which will be legendary disasters. Low on all three factors, cheesy but survivable. High on one, uncomfortable but potentially manageable depending on which factor. High on two, almost guaranteed to produce cringe. High on all three, that's the Hall of Fame.
The Breakfast Detective is high on artificiality and publicness, low on vulnerability. 2 out of 3. It's cringe, but not traumatic. The Emotional Temperature Check is high on vulnerability and publicness, medium on artificiality. Also, 2 out of 3. But the vulnerability factor makes it feel more invasive.
The NYT piece on icebreaker awkwardness highlighted that the worst offenders combine all three. High vulnerability, high publicness, high artificiality. That's the trifecta. Share something deeply personal in a contrived scenario and then announce it to the room.
Which brings us to whatever you were about to say about soulmates.
So this one's from a leadership retreat, not a tech conference, but it fits the category perfectly. The MC tells everyone to stand up, find a partner, not the person next to you, someone across the room, and then maintain silent eye contact for 7 minutes while finding your soulmate.
7 minutes.
7 minutes of silence. Just staring into a stranger's eyes while an MC periodically whispers encouragement like, really see them and let them see you.
That's not an icebreaker. That's a psychological experiment that wouldn't pass an ethics review.
And look at the factors. Vulnerability, through the roof. You're being told to find a soulmate, which is about as intimate as a concept gets. Publicness. You're standing in a room full of people all doing the same thing, visible to everyone. Artificiality. The framing is completely contrived. Nobody has ever found a soulmate by being told to stare at someone for 7 minutes. That's 3 for 3.
The trifecta of cringe.
And the thing is, I guarantee the organizer who designed this thought, they were doing something profound. They probably read about eye contact and oxytocin and thought, I'll bring that to the conference. But they skipped the part where oxytocin is released in trusting relationships, not in coerced staring contests with strangers.
The gap between the organizer's imagined outcome and the actual experience is the whole story here. The organizer pictures connection, vulnerability, breakthrough moments. The attendee experiences a hostage situation with a name tag.
And that gap is created by the paradox of engineered spontaneity. The more effort you put into making connection happen, the less natural it feels. The Guardian article nailed this. The best interactions are the unplanned ones. The coffee queue. The hallway. The moment you both reach for the same sandwich. Those work because nobody designed them.
They're opt-in. Low stakes. Organic. You can exit at any time without social penalty.
And that's the thing every icebreaker designer misses. Connection happens in the spaces between structure, not inside the structure itself. The conference schedule creates the conditions for interaction. It puts people in the same building, and then the interactions happen on their own. You don't need to program them.
So what would actually work? If you're an organizer and you've accepted that the breakfast detective was a mistake, what do you do instead?
The research points to a few things. First, low stakes, opt-in structures. Open-ended prompts that don't require personal disclosure. Instead of share something vulnerable, you say, what's something you've changed your mind about recently? It's still a prompt, but the person controls the depth. They can talk about a software tool or a life philosophy. It's up to them.
So you're lowering the demanded vulnerability without removing the invitation to connect.
Right. Second, activities that give people something to do together rather than something to say about themselves. Shared tasks. Solve the problem. Build something. Even something as simple as, find 3 things in this room that connect to the conference theme. Now you're collaborating instead of performing.
The human bingo problem disappears if the task is external rather than personal.
Third, and this is the one most organizers miss, permission to opt out without social penalty. You have to make it fine to not participate. Not you can opt out, but we'll all notice. Actually, fine. The moment opting out carries a cost. Participation is coerced and reactance kicks in.
The CNBCP suggested replacing icebreakers with observation-based prompts. Instead of, tell us about yourself, it's what's something interesting you noticed about the keynote. Again, the person controls the depth. They can offer an insight or just say the slides were blue.
And that's the principle. Lower the stakes, lower the demanded vulnerability, make it opt-in, and for the love of everything, stop making people role-play detectives over breakfast.
The meta-observation here, and this is where I think Daniel was pointing us, is that the weirdest icebreakers become legendary precisely because they fail so spectacularly. They generate stories, and stories generate connection, just not the kind the organizer intended.
The shared cringe becomes a bonding experience in itself. You meet someone at the next break and say, were you in that soulmate staring thing? And suddenly, you're allies. You survive something together. It's not the connection the organizer wanted, but it's connection nonetheless.
It's almost an argument for embracing the cringe. If the worst icebreakers create the strongest shared memories, maybe the organizer should just lean in. Design something so absurd that the shared experience of surviving it becomes the actual social glue.
I think that's a dangerous game. For every icebreaker that becomes a funny story, there are 10 that just make people uncomfortable and resentful. The remember that awful thing? Bond only works if the thing was survivable. The soulmate staring contest. Some people found that distressing. That's not a funny story for them.
Fair. There's a line between absurd and harmful, and 7 minutes of forced eye contact with a stranger is on the wrong side of it.
And as conferences move toward hybrid and asynchronous formats, I think these stage-directed icebreakers are going to evolve rather than die out. The organizer's dilemma doesn't go away just because some people are on Zoom. If anything, it gets harder. How do you manufacture connection when half your attendees are squares on a screen?
The virtual icebreaker is a whole other category of horror. Type your emotional temperature in the chat. Pick an emoji that represents your leadership style.
Don't get me started on the emoji icebreaker. That's a whole episode.
But the structural problem is the same. The organizer needs to create connection at scale, with zero budget, in 10 minutes, and the icebreaker feels like the cheapest lever to pull. Until someone invents a better lever, we're going to keep getting breakfast detectives.
And the people who design these things, I have some sympathy for them. They're given an impossible brief. Make 300 strangers connect meaningfully in 8 minutes. No, you can't spend any money. Go.
They're not villains. They're people with a spreadsheet and a deadline who Googled fun icebreaker ideas at 11 p.m. the night before.
And the top Google results are all terrible. That's the real problem. The icebreaker industrial complex is self-perpetuating. Someone writes a listicle called 20 icebreakers that actually work, it ranks for the search term, organizers find it, and the breakfast detective gets a second life.
The SEO to cringe pipeline.
That's exactly what it is.
I want to hear about the soulmate one again. 7 minutes. I can't get past 7 minutes.
7 minutes of sustained eye contact with a stranger while someone whispers about finding your soulmate. I heard about this from someone who was there. She said the first 30 seconds were awkward, the next 2 minutes were unbearable, and by minute, 5 people had started to break. Someone laughed nervously. Someone else just closed their eyes and refused to continue. The MC kept going. Stay with it. This is where the real connection happens.
The MC as cult leader is a subgenre of this that we haven't even touched.
And the thing is, if you read the research on eye contact and bonding, there's something there. Prolonged eye contact does release oxytocin, in contexts where both people have chosen it and feel safe. The research is real. The application was a category error.
That's the pattern with so many of these. There's a kernel of something genuine, curiosity about others, the power of eye contact, the fun of a game, and then it gets scaled into a mandatory exercise for 300 people who didn't ask for it.
Scale is the killer. What works between two friends at a dinner party doesn't work when an MC with a microphone imposes it on a ballroom. The context changes everything.
So where does that leave us? The weirdest icebreakers fail at connection, but succeed at story generation. The three-factor model predicts which ones will crash hardest. The organizer's dilemma remains unsolved. And somewhere out there, right now, someone is designing the next breakfast detective for a conference next month.
I feel like we should start a support group.
The breakfast detective was mine.
What?
2019. Mid-tier tech conference in Austin. They gave me a title, Conference Experience Consultant, and a budget of $0. The brief was, make people talk to each other. I had 45 minutes to design something. The breakfast detective is what came out.
You're telling me you're the person who inflicted breakfast interrogation on the tech industry.
I'm not proud of it, but I'm also not going to pretend it wasn't the best option I had. The alternatives on the whiteboard were worse.
Worse than the breakfast detective.
Musical chairs, but with business cards. Everyone circles the chairs, music stops, you sit, and whoever doesn't get a chair has to give their elevator pitch to the room. I also had the apology circle. Everyone apologizes for something. The group votes on who's most sorry.
The apology circle.
It was a dark whiteboard. The breakfast detective was the least bad idea on it.
I have so many questions. Do you still have this whiteboard?
I took a photo. It's in a folder somewhere.
Of course you did.
The thing you two didn't mention, and you got close, is that the organizer doesn't just have a $0 budget. They also have a time constraint that's insane. 8 minutes. That's what I was given. Fill 8 minutes with connection. You can't build rapport in 8 minutes. You can barely order coffee in 8 minutes if the line's long.
You reach for something structured because structure fills time.
Structure fills time and looks like programming. The organizer can point to it. See, we did an icebreaker. It's a checkbox. Nobody measures whether it worked. They just measure whether it happened.
The breakfast detective. Did it work?
No, but it filled 8 minutes, and nobody asked for their registration fee back. By the metrics that actually matter to a conference organizer, it was a success.
That's the bleakest thing I've heard all episode.
The worst one I ever saw wasn't mine. It was a leadership retreat. This would have been 2018, where the facilitator made everyone stand up and maintain silent eye contact with a partner for 7 minutes. Find your soulmate. He kept saying it. Find your soulmate. Someone started crying, not in a breakthrough way, in a please let this end way.
7 minutes. 7 minutes?
I timed it. 6 minutes and 43 seconds before he let people sit down. I still think about the 17 seconds he owed us.
You were there.
I was running the soundboard. I had nothing to do for the whole exercise. Just sat there watching a room full of adults stare at each other, while a man whispered about soulmates into a headset mic.
Did anyone actually connect?
2 people got married. No. What do you think happened? Everyone went to the break and complained about it. That was the connection. The complaining.
It worked exactly the way we were saying. The shared negative experience became the bond.
It's not a strategy. It's an accident. Nobody's designing for shared misery on purpose. They just keep stumbling into it because the alternative, actually creating conditions for organic connection, requires time and money and letting go of the microphone. 3 things most conferences won't do.
The letting go of the microphone part is the one that really matters. You have to trust that people will connect on their own.
If you trust that and they don't, you've got nothing. The icebreaker is insurance against silence. Bad insurance, but insurance.
I keep coming back to the whiteboard. Musical chairs, but with business cards. That's a premise for a horror film.
The apology circle was worse. I had a whole scoring system. Most sincere apology got a gift card.
You had a scoring system for apologies.
Like I said, dark whiteboard.
If you still have that photo, I want to see it.
I'll look for it.
Where does that leave us? The weirdest icebreakers are often born from desperation, not malice. They fail at their stated goal, but succeed accidentally at giving people something to talk about. And the breakfast detective, which I'm still processing, was the least bad idea on a whiteboard that included combative apologizing.
The paradox of negative bonding is real, but it's not a design principle. You can't build a conference around shared misery and expect people to thank you for it. The takeaway from all of this, from the research, from the examples, from Hilbert's whiteboard of horrors, is that the best thing an organizer can do is get out of the way. Create the conditions. Put people in the same space. Give them something interesting to react to. And then trust that connection will happen without a microphone telling people how to do it.
If you're an attendee and the MC tells you to turn to your neighbor and interrogate them about breakfast, know that you're participating in a tradition. A weird, cringe, strangely memorable tradition that someone designed at 11 p.m. the night before, with a $0 budget and 8 minutes to fill.
If you've witnessed a truly unhinged icebreaker, something that makes the breakfast detective look restrained, send it to us. Show at myweirdprompts.com. We might do a follow-up with listener-submitted horrors. I want to know what's out there.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, who apparently has secrets.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.